Welcome to the Newsbusters podcast with the executive editor of Newsbusters, your host, Tim Graham.
Hello and welcome from the Media Research Center, where we're here to document, to expose, and to neutralize liberal media bias. Fun fact today, did you know that the Media Research Center hosts the largest TV news archive in the world? Obviously, the MRC started in 1987 and recorded everything on VCR, little Kodak VCR tapes. And we currently have an estimated 813,570 hours of programming on tape, providing our daily ammo to discuss the news media. More than 800,000 hours. Now, of course, some of those are, they're harder to locate in the cloud, but we are here and we do have the ability to go back and dig stuff up from the olden days when some of us were young. Today, I wanted to discuss for a minute this idea of the news media just taking Biden's terms and running with them. You know, I joked last time about infrastructure, where we've redefined infrastructure down to being positively everything. Well, in the column I have posted at Newsbusters, this is also happening with bipartisanship. The Biden people have decided they're going to broadly redefine so much as to make meaningless the notion of bipartisanship. And in the Washington Post, Ashley Parker had a story or a press release, call it what you will. The Biden people are redefining the word. They turned to Anita Dunn, senior Biden advisor, the woman who thought Mao Zedong was cool.
And then the third lesson and tip actually come from two of my favorite political philosophers, Mao Zedong and Mother Teresa, not often coupled with each other.
She said, if you looked up bipartisan in the dictionary, I think it would say support from Republicans and Democrats. It doesn't say the Republicans have to be in Congress. So their whole notion now is, okay, we've got 50 Democrats and 50 Republicans in the Senate. We're going to jam through our agenda, and it doesn't matter whether the 50 Republicans all vote no. We're still going to call it bipartisan. Or as Ashley Parker very helpfully proclaims, as the Biden administration prepares to pursue a broad agenda ranging from infrastructure to immigration to guns, the president and his aides have proffered a definition of bipartisanship untethered from Washington. There doesn't have to be bipartisan negotiation or discussion in Washington. Republicans, why are you even bothering to show up on Capitol Hill? Because we're not negotiating with you. They point to broad public support among voters in both parties, as well as Republican governors, mayors, and other local officials. Well, again, what they're probably starting with the whole notion of COVID relief. We found that when we go to governors and mayors and say, would you like a couple billion? They seem pretty happy with that idea. I mean, you can look at, for example, Politico and the Morning Consult had a poll in mid-March. This is where they run around and say, well, the Republicans support the COVID relief bill. Maybe not the ones here in Washington, those sticks in the mud. But if you go out and ask the everyday Republican, there's broad support for COVID relief. Well, they don't ask, do you really feel like spending $3 trillion now and another $3 trillion on an infrastructure bill a little while down the road? Do you give any kind of a sense that the national debt is something we should be concerned about? Well, no, this was not in the poll. So what do you think Republicans are going to do if you ask them, do you favor COVID relief? They're going to say no. the government shut this country down for the pandemic. So obviously people are going to say, look, we understand there's a recovery process. You know, we understand that some businesses were going to go under because of the shutdown. Let's look at some of the questions they did ask. You know, do you favor sending direct payments of $1,400 to people making under $75,000 a year? Well, yeah, large numbers of people said yes to that. In fact, when you look at the crosstabs, the category of very unfavorable opinion of Biden, two-thirds of them supported sending direct payments of $1,400. So I don't know how you cast that as Republicans supporting Biden when they say their opinion's very unfavorable. It just means these sorts of things, when you call and ask about them on the phone, people don't want to say no to. Are you in favor of expanding the child tax credit for 1 year? Yeah, people don't say no to that. Are you in favor of putting $7.5 billion into distributing vaccines? Unless you're a rabid anti-vaxxer, you're going to say yes. You know, you can ask a couple of these where you can see that the Republican voters aren't two-thirds in favor anymore. So they said, do you favor putting $25 billion into rental and utility assistance? Well, that's not very well explained. So you got 16% said they don't know. 49% favored. 35% didn't favor, but I guess you could say, well, that's only a plurality of Republicans. Do you favor providing $350 billion in assistance for state, local, and tribal governments? That got you at least a little bit more of a pushback. So you had 43% of Republicans in favor, 42% opposed. And then again, 15% that don't know. You did get a majority of Republicans who would disapprove when they were asked, are you in favor of expanding premium subsidies for those buying insurance through the Affordable Care Act, aka Obamacare? A majority of Republicans were against that. But I mean, that's not the part of the poll that the liberal media is going to run around with. They're going to say, aha, Biden can somehow be bipartisan because people are in favor of the stimulus payments, or they're in favor of vaccine distribution funds. This is the game that they're playing. Then they're running around saying Biden has a high approval rating. I guess today, Politico has a poll claiming that Biden's approval rating is 60%. Look, there are reasons that you would say a new president should have a higher approval rating, or saying that the country's on the right track right now. We're coming out of the pandemic. The economy's beginning to rev up. I think I would tell a pollster things are on the right track. I'm hopeful for the country. I can be hopeful for the country, thinking the country's going on the right track, and still disapprove of Biden. I could say, I suppose, that the country's on the wrong track with this massive, massive amount of government spending that's being proposed. But I'm just saying it would be reasonable for a Republican to say right track. That's why right track to me is always kind of a bogus measurement. You know, in 2004, to tell you an old story, the Kerry people spent the whole time going, see, people keep saying the country's on the wrong track. That means John Kerry's going to win. No, sir. And then there's the notion that people want to say, well, we have a new president. We want to give him a chance. Biden has this enormous reservoir of goodwill because he's not seen as this trolling Twitter villain. You know, people are so pleased that the president's tweets are bland. Well, whoop-de-doo. That's nice. That's a relief, I suppose. But, I mean, talk about setting the bar low. Politico also has a political playbook item out on how moderate Republicans would like to negotiate with Biden. And they've met with him, and they sort of use that to say, look at how bipartisan Biden looks. And then hours later, Schumer's planning how we're going to ram this spending bill through using what they call reconciliation. I mean, that sort of sounds like an Orwellian term. In reconciliation, we jam it down your throat. Doesn't sound very reconciling, but that's what happens. So they find the anonymous people here. One says, Biden is a horrible villain for us, meaning not that he was an actual villain, but that he was difficult to villainize. This is one of those things liberal reporters are running around saying right now. And that is, wow, it's really hard for you to make him look negative, don't you think? Did you see the neat tweet he put out this morning? Jill went out for baked goods. Ooh, Jill's wearing fishnet stockings. I mean, and then they're like, well, I don't know why you think he's hard to villainize. We've just been basically presenting him as a wonderful human being nonstop. Well, at least when they're discussing him. And so the Republican complains there are deeply entrenched narratives that have some truth but are no longer totally true. Reporters believe them despite all evidence to the contrary. Well, you think evidence moves reporters? They have a narrative to serve. They have a country to save. They always think they're saving democracy when they save the Democrats. These Republicans see a White House constantly rubbing dirt in the face of Republicans over their lack of interest in bipartisanship while passing as many partisan bills as they can possibly ram through before they lose the House in 2022. There is a certain amount of cynicism here, and that is we all understand the usual trends in politics, and that is usually the president's party loses seats in the House and Senate in the midterms. Doesn't always happen, and it can be, you know, quite a wide gap. The president might lose 3 seats. He might lose 53, his party. You just don't know. I mean, obviously, some of us in the older side remember, I think it was 52 seats in 1994 when the Republicans took control of the House, and we all looked at each other like, is that allowed? Our whole lives, the Democrats have run the House. So it's quite possible that the Republicans will take the House back in 2022. And obviously, if the Senate's 50-50, there's a decent chance that the Republicans will take care of the Senate, too. So their whole notion now is, let's jam through these bills while we can. And they happily discuss how this will be Biden's legacy, passing these massive multi-trillion-dollar spending bills. Now, I always think to myself when we talk about spending that, you know, people will say, do you support more funding for schools? Yes. Do you support child tax credits? Yes. Do you support stimulus payments of $1,400? Yes. Those are sort of questions you ask and you don't have to pay for. Now, if somebody came to your door and said, you know, can you give $20 for COVID relief? And then they came back the next day and the next day and kept asking for $20 every day. At some point, you'd be like, no, I'm good. We don't tend to do that in the governmental system. We have a news media that says, are you for passing $6 trillion in spending? Sounds good. Okay, let's do it. Just understand, the media are never the brakes when it comes to spending. I mean, they might, in the olden days, they would say the defense spending budget was horrible. And if there was a deficit, it was the problem with the Pentagon. The Pentagon's ruining it. Can't do that anymore. The Pentagon's not a large enough share of the budget. But it's just this whole notion that somehow the media in any way are a restraint on government or on government spending is laughable. It's not the way they do things. So then there's another quote here, which I think underlines from Politico that underlines where we're going right now. And the Republican who is not named says, everything they support is defined as either COVID relief or infrastructure. And everything they oppose is like Jim Crow voter suppression and evil. Righto! and continues, and you constantly just feel like you're in this gaslighting chamber of insanity. But it's working. The Democrats can say this stuff, and it seems to be working. We have a news media that is very obviously seeking to help President Biden, seeking to help him with his legacy, with his agenda, with his terminology. Just the way that they're all running around saying infrastructure's whatever he says it is. You know, I was just watching the Eddie Murphy Coming to America sequel, and it reminds you of that scene in the original where he's got the potential wife who's so subservient that he tells her to hop in one leg and bark. That's the news media. They're the people that would hop on one leg and bark if that's what the Democrats tell them to do. I mean, it's embarrassing. And this is where you sort of say, they talk a big game about how, well, we're important because we're government watchdogs. We hold people accountable. No, you don't. The Democrats are not held accountable, and the Republicans are blamed for things they have nothing to do with. Or the Republicans are basically defined as reinstalling segregationism. There's no fact check. President Biden's at the Al Sharpton hootenanny by Zoom, still dropping these Jim Crow bombs.
MRC-store.com.
Pro-gun, pro-life, pro-God, and pro-America? Welcome to the Pro Shop.
MRC-store.com.
T-shirts, hoodies, goodies, and much more.
MRC-store.com.
The only store that always offers conservatives more.
That's MRC-store.com.
Log on, log in, and help the Media Research Center while shopping for great gear today.
MRC-store.com.
And we're back with Curtis Hauck, who in the current era, job number one is to watch those White House briefings. I want to say this. Biden's had one press conference in 84 days. I know he's supposed to have a what they call a two and two this week. But I mean, just the fact that there's so many Jen Psaki briefings kind of almost papers over the idea that Biden isn't actually talking. How's it going?
Well, they've had one every single day that Biden hasn't been traveling. So as you can imagine, since Biden really hasn't ventured outside the White House other than weekends to Delaware, Camp David, or really said much of anything outside of very quick, less than 5-minute pool sprays where the press shout questions, but they don't really fight it like they would with Trump, and then they leave like little good boys and girls. They've had one every day. So, and I've watched every single one here. So, yeah, you think who is the person who speaks the most for this administration? It's Jen Psaki, where it's almost like Jen Psaki's the president here and not Joe Biden or Kamala Harris here. And that really goes to the question and the concern that a lot of people have, which is who's in charge here? And because the reason I say that also is because reporters ask Biden Psaki questions about how involved Biden is. How involved is he in negotiations? How many calls has he been making? Who does he talk to? Who does he trust on the Republican side? And Psaki's answer is always, we don't have any calls to read out for you. You know, if we did, we would. But otherwise, it's all confidential. And you're like, you know, she's just very, like, adamant. She almost doesn't let reporters finish that question. So then the question becomes, is Biden actually talking to these people? Like, what is going on here?
They would probably say, no, it's message discipline. I had written about Paul Farhi basically saying that, these people, it's essentially a leak-proof operation. And the question you have to ask yourself is, how hard are they trying?
Well, I'm just going to reject the premise of the question.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. You know, and meanwhile, you do get some reporters that are actually trying. We've talked about Steve Doocy in the past.
Yeah, but you, yeah, I should mention to the listeners that Curtis sometimes offers a running commentary while he's watching this, and we'll get this Deucey time.
Deucey time. Yeah, Deucey smash. You know, Deucey, yeah, Deucey's day. I had in a headline the other day. But, you know, there's been some other ones. I will say Deucey's most recent exchange was very good, bringing up the fact that Biden has repeatedly for decades decried court packing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he brought that up to her last week. I believe it was Thursday or Friday. And then he also got some help from Caitlin Collins on that. But what Deucey brought up was Biden in 1983 calling court packing, quote, a bonehead idea.
President Biden once said in 1983 he thought court packing was
time back machine.
Oh, yeah. He said he thought that court packing was a bonehead idea when FDR tried it. So why ask a panel now to go and see if it is a good idea?
Which is really which is good fun. But I should also say that Philip Wegman of Real Clear Politics really has made some waves, really making Psaki mad a week or two ago when saying President Biden and Democrats are calling for these boycotts of Georgia over the voting law, which is a whole nother discussion about just it being totally fake news and a lie that we've repeatedly debunked here at Newsbusters quite easily. Why aren't you then calling for a boycott of the Chinese Olympics? You know, they're running concentration camps over there, you know, like, you know, and she didn't like that. She did not like that at all.
You know, the president had voiced his support for MLB making a decision about the All-Star game in Georgia. I'm wondering, when can we expect a final determination from the president about the United States participating in the Beijing Olympics, given that he said the Chinese president doesn't have a democratic bone in his body?
Well, I think the U.S. Olympic Committee would play a big role in
on Major League Baseball here in the United States.
He actually didn't. I think I don't know if you heard the answer that happened a few minutes ago where we addressed this and I answered the question. So and I give a little more context, but maybe you weren't paying attention to that part. Let's go to the go ahead in the back.
You know, and he also brought up with gun control last week. He said, like, what is this going to do to law abiding owners? Is there any evidence that these ghost guns or these stabilizing grips are causing these waves of crimes and waves of mass shootings that have to be stopped? And she didn't really have any information. She's like, oh, the experts that are here today would probably be able to provide you with some data. But she didn't have any of that ready. And it just supposed, you know, just take it and move on here. And then, of course, Olivia Nuzzi, which was very interesting, asking Jen Psaki on Monday about what's very clear to all of us, which is Joe Biden and Kamala Harris have been vaccinated since last year. They were vaccinated, I think, in December when they first started getting shots. And they're still wearing masks. They're double masking. We saw Biden do that when he visited a D.C. hardware store. Cabinet officials are all masked, even though they all have been vaccinated for continuity of government. They've been vaccinated for months now. And yet they're all still wearing masks. They're all still social distancing.
Do you think that the White House has had any part in this, in having a sort of maybe pessimistic message towards some Americans who are skeptical of this administration, who for partisan reasons or otherwise, to see vaccinated people in the cabinet or the president continuing to wear masks around each other, or hearing that things won't be back to normal as the vaccine continues to be distributed? Do you think that that is having a negative effect at all?
On people, make sure I understand your question. On people not taking the vaccine?
Yeah, people who are skeptical of the vaccine and who don't trust the Biden administration.
And Psaki did what she usually does, which I have to credit Jerry Dunleavy for noticing, which is when she doesn't like a question, she either A, gets personal, which I've noticed, and then what he've noticed is, I don't understand your question. Mm-hmm. Tell me more about your question.
I'm not sure I'm understanding your question.
And so she tries to muddy the waters for people listening, so that, you know, she can try and wiggle her way out of it. So it's incumbent upon reporters to really restate their question and then also double down on it, because Psaki's playing dumb here. She's a smart person. She clearly knows what's going on here. And she said that the science is not clear when it comes to what people that have been vaccinated should and shouldn't be doing, which is absolutely just total hogwash here. And I had a lot of resistance types on Twitter come at me for posting that video saying it was a horrible question, because I said it was great questioning. And Nuzzi predicted this herself last year. You wrote about this, Tim, in your column, which is she predicted that it won't be as friendly or personally advantageous for reporters to go after Biden the way that it was for Trump, that made them seem like cool kids.
Well, I mean, you read the John Carl book, you read the Jim Acosta book. There's Peter Ducey's maybe he'll get a book deal. Showy. Mm-hmm. It's showy. It's not necessary. And usually that's the kind of thing that maybe you do that when you've been in the White House press corps for 30 years and are retiring or mm-hmm. something. But there, it is a good question. And that is that, yes, this virtue signaling of always wearing the mask when no one's in danger of getting a disease. And it's the whole notion of, yes, what her point was, if the vaccination doesn't cause us to not have to wear masks, which nobody really likes, or if you do, you're kind of weird. People want the idea that life's going to get better. And so, yeah, it goes back to why Trump was making fun of it in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, that was pre-vaccination, so you could get fussy about that. But it's that whole notion of, we're going to mask shame you. And since we've been the premier mask shamers, we can't possibly do anything different. But what was that? It was a picture of the cabinet. It's like 30 people and they're all wearing masks and they're all like 6 feet apart.
Yeah, it was this giant, it was like a group photo, like the person taking a picture in whatever room of the White House it looked like they had to stand on one of those giant step ladders to be able to fit everyone in the photo. And it was just so ludicrous. Joy Reid's been doing the same thing. Fauci's been going around saying the same thing. We noticed this yesterday with Jeff Zients, the White House coordinator, who took the Burks role in this administration, and Fauci talking about the J&J vaccine. They were in the briefing room, and the three of them, two of them with Psaki, if one of them was not, whoever wasn't speaking would be standing there wearing a mask, socially distanced there in the briefing room. And I'm like, excuse me here. I don't know about the reporters. I'm assuming a lot of them are vaccinated by this point, but you know, they can wear their masks. People don't really see them unless they're the ones asking the questions. But the three of them have been vaccinated for quite some time. And you know, it's all for show. And Red Steve's really hammered in this. I encourage people to go over to The Spectator and check that out, because he did a blog that we put as an editor's pick, actually. If you come to Newsbusters, we have it for you. And it really just hammers that point home about how ludicrous this whole thing is, because we were told that the vaccine is the way out of this pandemic. And it still is. And it still is, people. It is. But, it's about control. They're upset that the vaccine took so little time to be able to develop under President Trump's leadership with Operation Warp Speed that,
Well, some people are saying that, too. They're saying, you know, Trump was so proud of getting the vaccine developed. Why are the Trumpers the ones that don't want to get it? You know, that's a decent question. Mm-hmm. I should mention, Curtis is wearing his Washington Nationals hat, and I'm sure that he's looking forward to getting into Nats Park
mm-hmm.
with the mayor of D.C.,
oh, my goodness. Well, the good news is they recently updated capacity to 25%. So we're moving in the right direction. 10% for Capital One Arena for the Capitals game. So Brent Baker and I, the boss man, hope to be getting out there soon.
Oh, good. Good. Well, I was going to say, I just merely brought that up because it's not only on your head. I can look at your laptop and see there's an ad for a Nats hat.
Yeah.
Clearly, your internet knows you. Curtis has quite an array of Caps and Nats stuff and Cincinnati Bengals, which we've tried to figure out before.
It's very convoluted. It would take an entire podcast episode to figure that out.
Let's shift subjects to the debut of Greg Gutfeld's 11 p.m. show, which is not a new show. It's really been pitched as a late night show. Mm-hmm. And it's funny because, oh, the Daily Beasts and these people are all like, oh, it's not funny. It's not funny at all. It's so humor impaired. And it's like, you guys seem to think Jimmy Kimmel's funny. You can think Stephen Colbert is funny. At the very least, you can say conservatives are enjoying Gutfeld's humor a lot and have been enjoying Gutfeld's humor for years. You just don't like it because you don't agree with it.
Right. Yeah. You have how many here? You have ABC, CBS, NBC, Comedy Central, TBS with Conan.
And B.
Yeah, and B and Samantha B, my old arch nemesis. and then also on NBC and CBS, you have The Late Late Show and Late Night, Corden and Seth Meyers. So there's how many of those shows versus just one here?
And then there's Lily Singh.
Oh, Lily
for
Singh.
For diversity and inclusion.
I forgot about her. She comes on, I believe, at 1:35, 1:40 a.m. Eastern time.
I did see, by the way, I was hopping through the Snap Stream, and she had Padma Lakshmi on of Top Chef. And I love the show Top Chef. I don't know why. I'm a foodie.
Yes,
some people make fun of that word. Anyway, yes, Lily Singh and Padma were just gushing over Kamala Harris, which you would kind of expect. Yeah. Indian Americans loving Kamala Harris. Okay, but that's standard fare in Comcast diversity and inclusion guidelines. You're supposed to gush over your vice president.
Right, exactly. So just to give the listeners the numbers here, Gutfeld in his first week averaged 1.57 million viewers, so over 1.5 million viewers.
Nice.
Which obviously, to the surprise of no one listening, crushed Lion Bryan on MSNBC and Don Lemon, as Tucker likes to say, on CNN. He also... He topped Jimmy Fallon, which is absolutely incredible. And again, you know, people need to remember that, Fox is a cable network. Fox News is a cable network, whereas NBC is, you know, somebody can still put up, I don't know, the rabbit ears or just some non-cable digital box and get it in any corner of the country. So, and he almost beat Jimmy Kimmel. Jimmy Kimmel was at 1.58 and Gutfeld was at 1.57. So 10,000 viewers separated Gutfeld and Kimmel, which is absolutely incredible. And he obviously demolished Trevor Noah, who's just barely over 500,000, and Conan at 250,000 viewers here. So these people saying it's not humorous here, conservatives are tuning in. They love it. And it's gone exactly the way I think Fox is looking for it to do, which is Gutfeld combines humor, talking about, you know, Stelter. If he wants to virtue signal, he needs to look at his cholesterol, and saying, you know, Gutfeld lecturing Fox hosts about vaccine selfies as rich as the frosting on his morning strudel, and while posting the picture of Stelter doing a show without pants on. But then he also does it, which a lot of these, you know, comedians do more so than humor nowadays, which is make political points and make serious points, which is Gutfeld's really been making it his first week to his mission to talk about the lies and how CNN and MSNBC in particular, those two networks, exist to elevate people's heart rates by making people hate each other is what he said on Friday. And that's what's so true. They exist to create outrage. From their chyrons to their commentaries that we see from Breonna Keeler and Don Lemon and Jake Tapper, and also create infotainment like Cuomo with his staged return from his basement almost a year ago.
Yeah, I think that this is one of the things I think that's really frustrating for conservatives, and I wish liberals would just understand it, and that is they do this, I mean, just the way Biden did. We're here to unify the country. We're against divisiveness. No, you're not. You don't unify the country screaming Jim Crow at the Republicans. And yeah, sadly, you were mentioning to me, Gutfeld actually got preempted by third night of protest coverage. It bothers me that they're going to be like, we're live from the streets. We're waiting for the riots to break out and the looting. Like, at what point do any of these people ponder that they're actually making things worse?
Well, that's what our Nick Fondacaro found with CNN a few nights ago. A guy went up to Sarah Seidner from CNN.
All right, so tell me what you think about what's going on.
What I think
here.
About this is all the press and all the extra shit y'all do makes this worse.
You think so?
Yes. When people want to protest, they shouldn't do it in front of a fucking police. Courthouse. Like that. You get what the fuck I'm saying?
She's on their side, by the way. I should point out, during the George Floyd riots, she was saying she almost made the Stephanie Rawlings Blake argument that these people need space to destroy here because people are so frustrated, and how else would they get their message across if they're not? You know, if people aren't listening, then, you know, this is maybe the step that needs to be taken here to burn stuff down. She was trying to have a conversation with him. She offered to give him her number to converse or whatever it is they want to do, go back and forth. But the guy kept saying, you're making things worse. You bring the cameras in, and that's what people want here. But the point that I also made to you that we were talking about, in addition to this addiction to riots, which Ken Matthews filling in for the late Rush Limbaugh today made actually on my way in today, talking about there should be a riot channel. We have a channel for just about everything nowadays. So how about a riot channel where there'd be some calming voice as you switch between locations? Minneapolis, Chicago. But the point from a news gathering that, you know, Aaron Rupar and all the rest of the bad faith actors out there were trying to make fun of is, oh, Gutfeld got preempted. That's bad news for his show. Like, it somehow signaled that his show isn't doing well and that Fox might be looking to cancel him, which is absolutely insane. His argument was he didn't even make it half a Scaramucci before Fox preempted him. It's called breaking news. Even if you don't like it and you have concerns about the obsessive, you know, almost riot porn like levels, that's kind of how a news operation goes. And you have a host afterward in Shannon Bream who went back to her old slot and just did 2 hours last night.
I think we can guess, Curtis, that if, let's say Fox made the decision to, okay, we're going to do all this live coverage of the third night of protests. And I know they did it a little differently than CNN and MSNBC did. But they're still, you know, showing you what's happening on scene. If they had put the Gutfeld show on, so we all know that what would happen probably is the liberals, the Rupars, would tweet out, here's CNN covering the protests, here's MSNBC covering the protests, and here's Greg Gutfeld being goofy, and how insensitive that is.
Right, exactly. And that's what Stelter and Darcy do on a nightly basis when there's a breaking story in their newsletter. They'll talk about, oh, this happened, and Fox ignored it, or they moved on. And I mean, it's just so tiresome. It's so predictable. It's so ridiculous. And it's such a bad faith argument here because even they know how these news operations work. It's, you know, we note that at Newsbusters. We look and see if the networks break in for, I don't know, pick a major news event if they're going to break in for it. And some people would get upset if they miss their soaps or something. But I think the inverse is if you don't break in for something, it's damned if you do, damned if you don't sort of situation. So you do the right thing in terms of being a serious news organization. And I think Gutfeld would understand that, too.
Yeah.
But, yeah, we'll see what happens here with his show because it's very similar to his weekend show. So, listeners, if you liked his Saturday show and you haven't tuned in yet or don't feel like staying up late, definitely hit record. I'll try to blog it some more as we've gone along here with Newsbusters to give you some clips. But, you know, it's pretty good and it's very funny, and they'll start with the news, but then they'll kind of also cover other things as well. I should point out they did a funny skit about how one night stands are generally a bad idea last week, which was one of my favorite segments. It was just so funny watching Kat Timpf there, and she pointed out, my fiance's parents are both in the audience, and I have to talk about this. Yeah. And Gutfeld wants to bring on contrarian voices or newer voices that people might not be familiar with or get a shot on Fox, on other Fox shows, like Emily Jashinsky, who is a Defeldist and is now runs the National Journalism Center program, of which you are a graduate.
Well, so is Mr. Gutfeld. I was just going to say, kind of wrapping up the whole package here, is I was in the fall 1987 term of the National Journalism Center. Back then, it was on Capitol Hill. It was over on Maryland Avenue Northeast. And Mr. Gutfeld and I were in the same term, the fall 1987 term. He just ended up far more distinguished than I.
Yeah. And I believe our sometimes contributing writer, Matt Norcross's father, went to school with Gutfeld back in California in 19-blankety-blank. he said that it was the same thing. He thought the same thing as you did. He was like, I think I've had a very good life and very successful one, but Greg somehow flew past all of us.
Well, yeah, now it's like, where, you know, I've had neighbors and stuff who buy his books, and they're like, oh, you knew him when? So, yeah, we'll root for Greg, and he was the same person way back when that he is now. No change.
Which is a nice thing to hear. You know, you hear that with people that join certain networks, CNN, that where they'll change, and you'll see it on air. But with Gutfeld, he seems to be the same person, and we've heard that as well from people that, you know, Dana Perino would talk about it in public speeches as well, that it's the same person. And it's always nice to know of certain people who are the same off air and 20 years ago as they were on air.
Sometimes that's good.
Yes, this is true.
Sometimes if you don't like the brew, I've been the same person this whole time. Yes, thank you, Curtis, for coming on. We want you to come to Newsbusters and keep up with what's going on. Check us out once, twice, 24 times a day. Thanks for listening.